welcome to the Make It in Design podcast. I'm Beth Kempton, co-founder of makeitindesign.com, which is home to one of the longest running online design schools in the world. We help creatives from across the globe to thrive in the design industry. Together with my co-founder, Rachel Taylor, an award-winning design veteran, and our wonderful team, we love nothing more than to inspire creative people to follow their dreams, grow sustainable design businesses, and do what they love. We've created this podcast to bring you interviews with designers who have made many bold moves and followed their hearts in order to thrive as creative professionals. Many of them have learnt life lessons the hard way, and they all share their career highs and lows, wins and challenges, and their top tips for success. These conversations are gold, and you don't want to miss a single episode. So subscribe now, get yourself a lovely cuppa, and settle in for an inspiring chat. You can find out more about our much-loved online design courses and private design community, The Live Hub, at makeitindesign.com, or come and find us on Instagram at makeitindesign. And so, to today's conversation.
Hi there, everyone. I'm Vic Dickinson from Make It in Design, and I'm really excited for today's conversation with Janine Van Gool, the publisher, editor, and designer of Uppercase, the quarterly magazine for the creative and the curious. Janine has worked as a freelance graphic designer in arts, culture, and publishing, and has also taught typography and publication design at college level. She has a particular fondness for typewriters, a passion that's inspired a book all about their graphic history. Janine lives in Calgary, Canada, and I know many of the Make It in Design community are huge fans of Uppercase and have submitted to the open calls in the past and been successful in featuring in an issue. So a huge, huge welcome to the podcast, Janine. I'm really thrilled to have you as our guest.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be with you today.
Great. And I'm going to dive straight in, Janine. Mm-hmm. So you describe yourself as a curator and a gatherer. Where does this passion come from, and has it always been there?
Well, I'm a graphic designer. That's what I was trained in. So for me, my love of gathering is because I want to combine images and words. And so I did that for a long time for clients, in that I would help my clients in the arts and culture industry take images and words and combine them into brochures and publications and that sort of thing for their interests. But after a while, I just wanted to do my own thing and be ultimately in charge of my own creative endeavors. And so that love I have of gathering and curating comes front and center, because I need to gather and curate and look and be inspired by and seek out content for the publications that I create. So that's where that comes from. I think it actually emerged in my childhood when I used to gather plants and little things and draw them and put them in books and keep track of them with little graphs and stuff. Like, I was always doing these sort of finding content, not so much because of the thing that I was finding, but just because I loved putting it together in some sort of book format.
Yeah. And did you keep all those books from your childhood?
Yes, I do. I have them. They're quite funny to look at now.
Oh, amazing. I was going to say, it must become a way of life. I can't imagine that you ever switch off from sort of finding and looking for inspiration and gathering. It's just the way you are.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's true for all of us visual creatives, that we're always looking. Really turn that off, thankfully.
Yeah. And, you know, Uppercase is a one-woman operation. I mean, it's huge, isn't it? You do everything. So how do you manage it, and what important lessons have you learned along the way?
Well, the first thing is, I guess, the day-to-day is just me, but I have a wonderful roster of contributing writers and illustrators who are part of the magazine, if virtually. So I can rely on them to, when I assign them an article, to deliver on that. And there's always new freelancers that I work with each issue. So they're part of the team in the content of the magazine. But then the day-to-day stuff, like customer service and filling orders and logistics and fulfillment and dealing with the printer, designing the magazine, all of that stuff. That's what I do. So it is a lot for one person, but I've been doing this since, 2009 is when the magazine was first started. So I have lots of years of experience in managing all these various things that I have to do. So it has become easier over the years in a lot of respects, and partly due to technology and partly due to just sheer determination to get it all done.
And are you somebody that loves a good list, likes to tick things off a list?
I do, yeah. And since I've done this magazine so many times, I've just released issue 51. A lot of those lists are now just part of my existence. I don't need to write them down. I just know what I need to be doing when. But I also do have like a database system called Notion, which is an app people can use to customize for their own use. And in there, I have lists of all the things I need to do, for example, when a new issue is coming out, and all my content ideas are all sorted out there. So, that's integral to getting things organized, is to have some good systems in place, for sure.
Definitely can appreciate that. And do you think that you're someone that thrives on being busy? Like always having, you know, lots to do and manage?
I think I would have to say yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I do. Well, I love what I do. And so all the things that I have to do in support of it, some of them are mundane activities. Some of them are really, you know, take a lot of mental effort to power through. But the bulk of it is stuff that I really enjoy doing, and it's a joyful experience. And so I don't mind having so much of my time and my brain space occupied by all things uppercase. It's just my way of life now. Yeah. So as long as I'm not kind of fighting against it, like if I just accept the fact that I'm going to have these times where I feel like I've got so much to do, it's impossible, but I've gone through them in the past and I'll get through them again in the future. I don't mind that I'm busy all the time.
It almost becomes like a process that you enjoy, I imagine. Like you say, you know that you're going to get through it. You've done it before and you know how to work through it. You've got those tools. So it's just, like you say, it's what you love. So,
yeah. Yeah. There's points in the cycle of the magazine. It's quarterly. So there are kind of peaks and valleys as far as the intensity of the work that's required. So there are parts that are kind of frustrating, or, you know, a lot of mental energy required to do them. Like, for example, compiling a mailing list and doing all that kind of data type stuff is vital, but not my favorite thing to do. But if I know if I get through it, then on the other side of it, I can take a bit of a break and kind of do some, you know, time to think of future ideas. And so there are these ebbs and flows that I'm used to now after all these years, so I can get through it.
I think sometimes as well, like you mentioned, some of them are mundane tasks. Sometimes depending on your energy for that day, it's quite nice to do a mundane task, isn't it, as well? And, you know, there's something mm-hmm. quite nice about doing like the monotonous and yeah.
Yeah, I think people might assume, looking at the magazine or anyone who has a creative career, you look at what their creative output is and you don't really see all the mundane things that are required to get that done, because it's certainly not the, you know, the pretty glamorous side of things. But there, it's very, very important to, you know, be on top of all those day-to-day things and the things that might, you know, bore you to tears, you still have to get done. Yeah. It's important. It's the foundation of having a successful creative business.
Definitely. And, you know, Uppercase is a quarterly magazine, so I was interested to ask you, how does that work? Have you got a pile for each magazine throughout the year that you sort of add to, or do you work on each one quite separately?
Well, I have a digital pile. So in this system, the Notion database, for example, I have an area where I put future issues, ideas, and then I've also slotted in the future issues as far as the time on the calendar. And I'm always gathering, as you've said, I'm like always looking for ideas and such. And I put them into my database and I tag them and I keep track of them. And then when I start to see kind of interests, topics that are that I'm seeing a lot of or that I'm really feeling engaged with, then I think, okay, well, that will be a good future topic. And then I put it into my editorial calendar, and then I work towards getting that done. So I do like to try and start slotting things in a year in advance. But it's really kind of nebulous when it's that far out. It's just like a general feeling that I, or a general topic area that I work towards. And then as I get closer and closer, it becomes more, more defined. And then I have to assign the content. I try to do that at least 2 months, I think it is, in advance of when it might be actually published. There's always new ideas. They're always getting slotted into some place, and eventually things come to the forefront.
Great. And you know, you've got quite a lot of experience in publishing before you started Uppercase. What made you take the self-publishing route for Uppercase?
As a freelance designer, I had lots of arts and culture clients, and so I did work for some book publishers, and I also worked for museums and art galleries where we would put together publications for exhibitions and such. So I had a lot of on-the-job training about how these things are put together, and I also used to work for a freelance for a magazine that published very sporadically over a number of years. And when that magazine stopped publishing, I had kind of this magazine section of my brain available to me to start thinking about doing it myself, right? To have my own magazine. But going back to childhood, I've always wanted to do my own publications. Like, I used to make my own books and such, and I had a pretend magazine, and like, it was probably a foregone conclusion that I would become a publisher. And with the skills as a graphic designer and my training, my the stuff that I learned from working with clients, I think it was just natural that I decided to publish my own things.
Is there anything that you didn't know that you've had to learn along the way?
Oh, everything related to subscriber management and fulfillment and the logistics of getting things from point A to point B. That is a huge learning curve, and something that I'm always learning about those aspects. But that's definitely something I had no experience with when I dove in, which is probably a good thing because it's pretty daunting.
And, you know, many of our listeners that are familiar with Uppercase, and for myself as well, the magazine's so distinguishable and recognisable in the style that it's got. And one of the things for me is each spine has this gorgeous pattern. I wanted to ask you about that. How do you select those? Is that your work? Is that work of other designers?
Right from the very first issue, I wanted to have some distinguishing features for the magazine, because I've always admired magazines that have been around for decades, like Communication Arts or Print Magazine when it used to exist. And they all have, when they're in the library, which is where I would find them, I would just admire their kind of the personality you could see from the spines when they're archived in the library. So that's sort of my inspiration. Like, I wanted to have Uppercase to be distinguishable both face front and then also from the spine. So that's where the pattern idea came from. And the patterns are ones that I design, and they reflect the content that's within that particular issue. So sometimes it's fairly obvious. Like, for example, issue 48 was about stationery, so I kind of did a paperclip pattern on the side. Sometimes it's more geometric, like the current issue that's out now has content about quilt making and art making. And so my pattern was actually just a checkerboard, which was inspired by just traditional patchwork, and it's very simple. It's fun to come up with those patterns each and every time.
It really sounds it, yeah. And they're definitely so distinguishable, and they're just gorgeous to have as a collection. So yeah, amazing. And I don't know how you fit it all in, because like you've said, you designed those yourself. And then, of course, you are now a fabric designer for Wyndham Fabrics. So I wanted to speak to you, how did that opportunity came about, and why was that something that you wanted to do?
Well, I'd been designing all these new patterns, one with every issue. So at a certain point, I had a nice little stack of magazines and you could look at the spines. And I thought someday that would be nice as a fabric collection. And I had just released, I forget what year this is now, it was probably 2014, 2013. I can't even remember. But I had my very first issue that included the uppercase surface pattern design guide, in which I feature surface pattern designers' work. And the president of Wyndham Fabrics is a subscriber to Uppercase, and they had referred to that and they'd hired some people. So I kind of got in touch with them and we had a relationship in that I was helping promote the fabric designers that they had found through my magazine. And then at some point, I was invited to be a judge at QuiltCon, and I got to look at hundreds and hundreds of quilts and pick my favorite. And Mickey Kruger, the president of Wyndham, was at QuiltCon, and he sent me an email just saying that he really enjoyed the quilt that I had picked for my judge's choice. And I was here in Canada at the time. I wasn't at the actual show, and I figured he had time to email me. So I emailed him back with a picture of the uppercase spines and said, you know, I thought this might look nice as fabric someday. And he agreed right away. And then we started doing uppercase fabric.
Wow, what an amazing. So you just grasped it. You grasped the opportunity.
I had the idea for a long time, but my focus with that relationship was to help promote my readers and such. And I didn't want to butt my head in, but this was a time like, oh, he's contacted me and he's got time on his hands here. So that was the right moment. And then, so the first collections were pretty much using the designs I had already created for the magazine and then introducing some other patterns that complement them or that were a larger scale or different colors and such. So I've done four collections for them.
Wow. That must be really exciting as well to see your collections as well.
Yeah, as a print designer, I never imagined that I would be on other surfaces than paper. Because when I was trained as a designer, that it wasn't, surface pattern design wasn't on anyone's radar as something that we could do, which is kind of too bad. It was only 1995. Pattern was everywhere. Still in 1995 when I was in school, but I didn't really understand it as a career option till I was involved in Uppercase Magazine and was exposed to the wonderful world of surface pattern design.
And I think it's really inspirational for people seeing that you can cross over and you know, work in the different industries, can't you, like that? You've got these transferable skills. Why not? So, yeah, a great example.
And I enjoy it because I'm a graphic designer, not necessarily an illustrator, even though I have the ability if I had time. And I you know, trained in art in college as well. But as thinking as a graphic designer for surface pattern design and fabric, that's fun. And I think that sets me apart a little bit from some of the other folks in the industry.
Yeah. And in the intro, I mentioned that you regularly put out open calls for creatives. And I know that at Make It in Design, we've been lucky enough to have lots of our students be successful in that. Why is that important for you to do that?
Well, the reader participation in the magazine's always been part of it. And thankfully, as the magazine has grown and over these many years, people know about Uppercase more. And it's a great way to involve people to get their feet wet in the world of Uppercase. So I do have regular open calls for submissions with each issue that I try to incorporate a way that people can participate. And I'm always grateful for the amazing contributions that people send in, and I try and publish as many as I can. So I think sometimes the magazine gets a little bit overwhelming because there's so much in it. But I recently added some more pages to help deal with that. But I just love seeing people's submissions. So I'll come up with an open call and post that in my newsletter, and it's on the website too under the participate tab. And it's related to the theme of each upcoming issue. And it's really fun to see how people interpret my themes, because it often influences me in the direction that I take editorially. So it's integral. And it's really useful for me too, because then I get to know what my readers are doing. And then even if someone might not get published in that very particular submission, I keep track of everybody and I put them in my idea file. And then it might be that someone submitted for something here and it wasn't quite the right fit, but then it becomes like a whole big article later on. I really encourage people to participate if they're inspired, because you never know where it will lead.
Definitely. And as I say, from Make It in Design, we've, you know, over the years, we've seen many of our students get involved, and it is such a wonderful opportunity. So yeah, please do get involved.
Yeah. Well, and I love the support of like learning opportunities like yours, because people, when they're in that learning zone, I think they're open to experimentation and they're looking for challenges to help kind of use as exercises or assignments. So I think it's a good compliment for people to just use the open calls as a creative prompt, really, to see what happens.
I mean, for us at Make It in Design, we have many people that come into to this later on, you know, not sort of straight out of college or anything, so they've already had a career in something. So like you say, the chance, the opportunity to work on a brief is quite rare, isn't it? So being able to work on a creative brief is a really great opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, Janine, you continue to grow and achieve so many things, but how do you choose what's next? And you've got all these ideas. How do you rein them in and keep on track?
Yeah. So in addition to the magazine, I published a book series called The Uppercase Encyclopedia of Inspiration, which is a mouthful. I don't know why I named it so large, but it's basically because I found that there were different topics and ideas that I wanted to explore in more detail, more depth, more pages that I couldn't do in the magazine. And so calling it an encyclopedia allows me to think of it as a series. So I can take any topic, creative topic that's appealing to me, and it'll fit under the overall umbrella of it being an encyclopedia of inspiration. So that was just one way of kind of corralling my ideas and giving them a bit of a shape and structure so that I can stay on course, like so that I'm not just getting distracted by all sorts of other ideas. I can think, well, does this suit this encyclopedia series? Is this a topic that I'd like to do a whole book on? So having that structure has been really good for helping me choose what to do next. There are lots of ideas I have that sometimes take years and years to percolate to the surface. So for example, Little You is a publication. I call it for the young at heart, and it's very small, like 5 by 6 inches. And it's just a cute little publication inspired by kind of the world of children, children's illustration, children's surface pattern design and clothing and such. And that was inspired by becoming a mother in 2010. But it took years before I actually was able to put together that first issue of Little You magazine. So it was percolating for a while. So I have some other ideas that have been percolating literally for years and years. They're just waiting for a time to bubble up to the surface where I can work on them. So sometimes it's frustrating because I have so many ideas and not enough time, but that's just how it is for all of us. I keep my notebook where it's in my database of ideas. And you know, if I'm looking for something new, I can always go back to those older ideas or kind of riff off of them and create something new.
I think it's better, isn't it, to have too many ideas than not enough.
Yeah, I think so. And with the structure of the magazine too, with it being quarterly and I am committed to putting that out, that kind of that rigor I find very inspiring, in that it takes away some of the procrastination or the decision making. It's just, I have to do it. And so that, I don't know if I'd call it pressure, but that requirement helps me be creative in that moment. And I realize as well that my creativity is constrained by the amount of time I have and, you know, the budget of what Uppercase can afford to do. And that's fine. Like, I can be creative within those parameters.
Yeah. And I read somewhere that you've got this passion for typewriters and mm-hmm. that you wanted to get a yellow typewriter. Did you ever get a yellow typewriter?
I did. Oh, it's upstairs here in my house. So typewriters were a bit of an obsession and that was one project that I had idea for years before it actually came to fruition. I did a book about the graphic history of typewriters, and that was published in 2015. It's sold out now. I think last Christmas I sold the last couple of copies. But it was a passion project. I've just always loved typewriters because it's sort of like that way of getting words and pictures onto a page, right? That I used to type out things and draw and make little things out of it. So, and the graphic design associated with the history of typewriters is really interesting. It's about the rise of women in the workforce and graphic design as a career option. There's all sorts of interesting things that were fun to deep dive into for that project.
Sounds great. I'm glad you got the yellow typewriter.
Yeah.
And you always have such gorgeous imagery in any of the publications. And I just wondered, how do you manage that, or do you sort of outsource that? And do you have any tips for listeners who are trying to do their own imagery for their own businesses?
Do you mean like the photography or illustration?
Yes.
Or
just the photography.
The photography?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of the content that catches my eye is I'm looking at it from the perspective of as a publisher, right? So if an artist already has amazing photography of, say, their work in their studio and kind of the details of their creative process, I find that appealing because then I know they already have the ability to share that with Uppercase. From a practical standpoint, when an artist is featured in the magazine, if it's an interview and or someone else is writing about them, then the artist doesn't get paid. But if I'm commissioning an article from someone, that is always paid work. If someone wants to be featured and they have really great photos of their studio and their process and such, then share that with me, show me, because I love to highlight that. And then other times I will hire a photographer to go and photograph a person's studio and such, although we're kind of on hold due to COVID for those sorts of measures. But ideally I can find a photographer as well. But yeah, within the publishing a magazine and the books, it's photography is really one of the key components that catch my eye, because someone could have really beautiful work, but if they don't know how to present it properly, then it loses its appeal.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, interesting points there. And then I was going to ask you, how important is social media for you and your platform? What types of ways do you find social media is good for getting the word out about Uppercase?
To be honest, I haven't thought about social media in weeks. it has been important over the years, and Uppercase started when blogs were the thing, you know, with Flickr and those sorts of early social media. And I could not have started the magazine without those platforms. And then through the years, Twitter was important back in when the magazine first launched, like in 2020. 2009, 2010, like Twitter was the place where literally if I didn't tweet about it, I would get no sales. Like, it was a direct relationship. That's obviously changed. For Twitter is no longer the same. And then Instagram was somewhat important to get people to know what's going on. But that was in the early days of Instagram, when it was actually, you know, related to the time, like chronology, and you could post something in the moment like when Uppercase was a gallery as well as a magazine, I could post images about a gallery show and people could come and see it. But now it's just like the relationship between when you post and when someone sees it or if they see it is broken. So it's not as useful. And through 2020 to 2021 now, I'm not even really worrying about Instagram. I've tried a few times to use later.com to schedule social media posts. And sometimes when I have the energy and the time, I will work on that. But I just can't. I think I have a lot of followers on there now just from being on there for so long, right? And it was never any sort of strategy to get all those followers. It's never been something that I want to spend a lot of time in. I don't worry about the algorithm. I don't really care how Instagram is serving up my images anymore. I just, if I have time, I'll do it. If not, then I don't. So I guess I've decided not to put my efforts in there. So my main social media type outlet is my newsletter that I send out every week. And also I have the Uppercase Circle, which is a private social site, a forum and sharing platform for Uppercase subscribers, to the people who subscribe to the print magazine. And so that's where I spend my so-called social media time, is there with the people who read my magazine. And I kind of treat it as a blog where I put up interesting links that I find or stuff happening behind the scenes, or ask opinions about forthcoming projects and such. So that's my social media that I use now, which is quite nice because it's away from the fray.
Yeah. And I think a really great takeaway from that is, looking at your own business and deciding what's the best fit for you. And for me, I mean, the newsletter that you send out is amazing, and the wealth of information in that, and how it's written and everything. And that feels more authentic to Uppercase than, an Instagram post. So, for people to consider that, which one is the best avenue for you and what you're trying to say.
Yeah, and where you are in your business and what you're doing. So for surface pattern designers, Instagram is great. And I didn't mention that I'm just, because I'm not actively posting on there, I'm still looking at Instagram, and I do find a lot of artists that way. And I love to see what my readers are doing. Right? So it's still part of my editorial routine and my daily, just time on my phone to browse. I look at Instagram, but just not, I'm not worrying about my presence on there as much anymore. And that's because I've been around for a long time. Uppercase is over 12 years old now. And so that kind of initial early growth period is over, and I'm just kind of maintaining what I have, I suppose. But yeah, for people who are new, I still recommend that Instagram is a good place to promote your portfolio and such, but just don't put all your eggs into that one basket.
Yeah, really great advice. Thank you. And Janine, you're obviously so busy with everything that you're working on. How do you take time out? How do you relax?
Well, this year I'm homeschooling my son, who's grade 6. So typically my mornings are, he and I are homeschooling and my husband Glenn here. And then we go out to the park and we do go out and play and go for walks and stuff. So that's actually relaxing and fun. And it's completely different from, Uppercase thinking. So I enjoy all of that. I would like to say that I sew, but my machine is right next to me. I haven't used my machine in weeks and weeks. But I have a little, I'm doing some hand stitching, some English paper piecing. I like to do that. But my big favorite thing to do right now is play piano, which we just got a digital piano a couple months ago, and I absolutely love it. I used to play as a kid and in high school band and stuff like that. But for right now, the playing piano is my best and my favorite thing to do.
Wow, that's great. And I was going to ask you, what's on your bookshelf? Because I've got this image that you've got a library at home that's amazing, full of all Uppercase and wonderful books.
Yeah. Well, if for people like they can't see right now, but I've got stacks of books around me. I wish I had a bigger bookshelf because I'm working from home these days, and my giant bookshelf is at the office. But I've got literally, I can see within sight, I've got 4 different stacks of books. And so some of those are things that I'm going to feature in the magazine, or they're just ideas that are percolating. One that I'm actively reading right now, which I can recommend, is called 4,000 Weeks, Productivity for Mortals, or something like that. I think Oliver Berkman is the author, and I'm enjoying it. It's about productivity and our relationship to time, knowing that we all have a finite number of weeks in our potential lives, which is 4,000 weeks. It's a little bit morbid, but I kind of like it because I think of productivity in that way too, that you only have a certain amount of time, so you might as well use it to the best that you can. That's a book I'm reading right now, and I'll probably include it in the recommended reading in my next issue. So I multitask.
Yeah.
read for fun. Oh, and then I'll just write a paragraph about it and include it in the magazine.
It sounds a good read though. I'm going to have a look
at it. Yeah, it's a good one. Just fresh out, I think. Yeah.
And then my final question is, what's the most important advice you have for our listeners to do?
Oh, well, I know there's a variety of listeners out there, but we're all creative people. And I think one of the things that I've noticed over the years that is a disservice to a lot of creative people is they don't have creative confidence. They don't give themselves enough props. Like, I think you have to be your own best cheerleader. You have to be kind to yourself. You have to believe in your talents, and you have to have confidence that you will see success. Because if you're creating things but you have no confidence about them, then I think that shows, and it's not going to be well received. So just love what you're doing. Love yourself. Be confident in what your abilities are, and just keep going.
That's really great. Really great words of wisdom there, definitely. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Janine, to speak to you. Thank you so much for your time today. Just for our listeners, where can they connect with you? We've mentioned the website and the newsletter, but do you want to just mention those for us, please?
Sure. Yeah. Uppercasemagazine.com. And that's where you can see what's new and sign up for my list. And Uppercase Mag on Instagram. And if you want to share your work with me, those open calls are available. And there's also just in the submission area, I think it's open pitch is what it's called. So you can just, fill in the form, show an example of your work, your website and such. And I look at all of that. So, if you want to pitch an idea my way, just use that form and I will take a look.
Amazing. And we'll share those links as well with the podcast. But once again, Janine, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you.
My pleasure too. Thank you so much, Vic.
Thank you.
So that's all for today. You have been listening to the Make It in Design podcast, and we'll be back soon with more inspiring stories from working designers and other creative people. Until then, check out our free courses and design resources at makeitindesign.com to help you move forward in your own creative journey. Or come and follow us on Instagram at Make It in Design for daily colour and pattern inspiration. And don't forget to subscribe to the Make It in Design podcast so you don't miss a single episode. We'll see you again soon.